Like, if you're reading right. a collection of poetry, it's got to be, it has to resonate with you. And that's the point.
Right.
So you read what you heard in your own head. And I love that. I love that perspective because it's wildly different than what I felt when I was writing it.
So what did you feel?
Like I was failing myself internally.
It makes sense and it sucks.
Yeah. Well. Getting tired of hearing all these noises in my head. I can't seem to make them go away. Sick and tired of hearing you say I'm already here.
When you gonna get up and go away? Hey, welcome back to Bad Ideas Social Club. My name's Aaron McCall.
I'm Joe Madison, and this is a space for growers and showers and failures and friends.
This time I took the Amtrak from Grand Rapids to Chicago and spent some time with Luciana Van Dort. She's a poet and a creative writer with a story that is as tragic and traumatic as it is an inspiring example of perseverance and, frankly, survival through creativity. I do want to issue a content warning. We had discussion around death, serious physical injury, mental health issues, and if I'm being completely honest, we probably made some jokes that some of you are not going to appreciate. And with that said, we had such a raw and honest conversation. It was insightful in so many ways. It got pretty heavy pretty quick, but don't worry. Our conversation is not without its moments of levity and, dare I say, hilarity.
All right, before we dive in, don't forget to follow wherever you're listening. Leave a 5-star review and don't forget to tell your friends.
And if you want to help support the podcast, buy a t-shirt or a hoodie or something from our Cotton Bureau store. There's a link in the episode description.
All right, let's get into this conversation you had with Lucy. Can I call her Lucy?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm hearing a little bit of a squeal. Do you hear that?
No. Is it my voice? I don't hear a squeal.
Stop playing with the fucking thing.
Just, it's not at my face. Okay.
Tighten it hard. So I sent you a photo earlier of the setup.
Yeah.
And you said you were excited, but nervous, self-doubt, imposter syndrome. Why are you being so hard on yourself?
Oh, fuck. That question has been asked of me by a lot of people who have known me closely. Why are you being so hard on yourself? I don't know. In my mind, there's no proof that I'm working. There's no proof that this is what I care about. There's only like proof of struggle.
What does that mean?
What I love to do is to creatively write. That's what I paid $80,000 plus dollars to do. Knowing that there was no career that I could get into that would pay for that, but just that I loved it and I wanted to study it.
Well, I read Love Ya on the way to Walt Disney World.
No.
Yeah. I'm emotionally prepared to spend a week at the happiest place on earth. And then I read your book and it grounds me in a very real way. It's raw and graphic.
Yes.
And creative and vulnerable. It paints a very vivid picture. And it kind of digs in and just kind of doesn't let go. And it sticks with you.
Thank you.
You want to get right into it?
Yeah. The reason it's so raw is because I pulled it straight out of my body. I mean, everything that happened in that book is basically living in me since 2007, 2008. Trauma that you don't expect to happen when you're 18, 19. You lose some people in a really... Should we mention what happens?
Go ahead. You can share as little or as much as you'd like. It's your experience that...
All right. So I lived a really sheltered life. I'm from Holland, Michigan. Nothing bad happens to you unless you scorn the Lord.
Fucking Holland.
I know. It's all I do now is scorn the Lord. But... it was going into sophomore year. I was still in my bubble freshman year and everybody was alive. And in August of 2007, I had two friends die in a really sudden car accident. And one of them I was really close to. We had been friends since, I mean, I'd known of him since we were kids, and we grew closer as we got older. And we had hung out the previous weekend, just me and him and then another friend. And he drove me home, and like, I literally said goodbye to him for the last time that weekend before the weekend that he died. And then he got in a car accident and he died in a cornfield, and nobody was prepared for that. I mean, we're 18, 19.
Yeah. How do you prepare for that?
You don't. Especially if you are in a bubble and that is not supposed to happen, and you're like, well, I did everything right. How is this wonderful person wiped from the earth and we're all still here? Because he really was kind to everybody. There was even a youth pastor who came up to me at his wake, and like his like body's off in the corner. A youth pastor came up to me and he goes, you look really sad. And I'm like, no fucking shit. Like, my friend is over there. What do you expect? And he was like, well, I don't want you to, you know, make him out to be better than he was. And I'm like, okay, I think we're done talking.
What the fuck does that mean?
Right. I'm not. And I'm done talking to you. And he really was that kind. And he really did have that impact on my life and on everyone else's lives that he came into. And
what was your favorite thing about him?
Oh my God. he was so stupid. Like, he was so street stupid. Like, he was an incredibly intelligent guy, but like did not have street smarts. And the morning that he came to pick me up to go to our friend's cottage, he was late because he woke up in another house with a bowl taped to his head because he passed out. Sorry if that's a spoiler for anyone. Yeah, but he woke up with a bowl taped to his head, so we had to, like, you know, come back from that. And my favorite thing about him was that he was predictably unpredictable. And he was like, yeah, I'll be there at 9. And it was like, you know, 12 in the afternoon. Yeah. And he was there. He came to pick me up. And he forgot his swimsuit. And we're going to a friend's cottage on a lake. So we had to stop by his house, which is way out of the way. And like, our other friend is like, are you guys still coming? And we're like, yeah, we're on our way. But I'll never forget the conversation that we had and the fact that he literally turned the radio down to hear what I had to say.
That's a huge moment, too.
Yeah. Nobody cares what you have to say, almost ever. But he wanted my opinion on some things and valued me as a person and gave me good advice. I don't know. It's really hard to pick what I loved about him because it obviously still affects me. Yeah. So, yeah.
So how do you take, what does the process look like to take that kind of trauma and that kind of life-changing experience and turn it into words? How do you take the creativity and turn it into something as beautiful as I read in Love Ya?
So for me, I was already working towards a creative writing major at Hope. I hadn't declared or anything, but I was writing these like superficial, dumb things like I'd always written, you know, like just like silly little stories that you would tell yourself, but they didn't have any depth. And then it suddenly became my only tool to really express how I felt. And one of the most important lessons I ever learned there was you need to say what you need to say with as little words as possible. Don't fill it in. Just punch people in the gut and go. Yeah. So, and that's what I just did. I mean, I punched myself in the gut over and over and over again with how I felt with that loss. In the summer of 2008, had a nearly fatal crash of my own. And for the record, it was an accident. I did not intend to die that day.
Was that a question?
Some people ask me, and it's kind of shocking to be able to go up to someone and say, hey, did you mean to die that day? Or is this like, you know, what were you trying to do? And I'm like, well, I was trying to go to work and I crossed the road and someone was in my blind spot. So
that's fucking bold.
Mm-hmm. another bold thing that was asked of me rhetorically was like, I wonder why you lived and his name is Sam. Sam died. And I'm like, well, they were a year apart. They were different incidents. And how dare you put that thought in my head? But that's lived there ever since.
So. Do you look at that person? Do you respect that person? Is that no. Is that a person that you look at and say, oh, they're offering things that I appreciate?
No, I don't talk to them.
So fuck them.
Yeah. But you can't get rid of that voice in your head that's like, why are you here? Why do you, like, I just turned 36 and every year that I get that's past 19 is an extra year. And I'm still here. So.
So did your own accident play into Love Ya? Absolutely. Or was that solely about Sam?
No, it's both. And they're blended together because there's so much guilt there. I mean, there's nothing that I could have done to stop his accident. There's nothing. Or mine, but just the guilt of still being around, like easily we could have swapped places. And he was, like I said, book smart, brilliant, you know, he mentioned wanting to be a doctor, but also just a plastic surgeon because he didn't want to risk anyone dying on his table. So he didn't want to get too deep into that, but he was absolutely smart enough to do whatever he wanted. And here I am.
Do not start talking shit about yourself.
That was a terrible laugh.
It was, I know, if I can edit out, it's gone because the listeners are not going to like that.
They're not. Nobody likes it. Nobody likes it. Nobody wants it. That's clear.
I think most creative people use their craft as an outlet, either creative or therapeutic. How would you describe your relationship with poetry, regardless of the experiences you're pulling from?
It's 1,000% therapeutic. Every time that I can put into words how I feel within, you know, a couple sentences, just really sharp sentences, I feel like I validate myself and then I can move on. It's so wonderful. It's just deeper than regular prose, and it's got a level to it where every word that you choose has to mean something, whether or not it rhymes, whether or not it's like a, you know, a prose poem where it's a paragraph. Every word matters, and I choose what I say with care just because I'm trying to get out of my own head how I feel.
Yeah.
And I'm not happy with the poem until I get it. And it's like, it'll be down to like a word, and then I'll
swap. How do you know it's right?
When I'll read it and I'll feel almost like the best part of me has written it. And then the rest of me likes it.
I love that.
Yeah. That's how it feels.
Can you pinpoint the moment that you knew poetry was your outlet?
So I started a blog in December of 2010 called Flippant Hiatus. And that's like not a plug. That's just its name.
I mean, which, by the way, doesn't have your name on it anywhere.
No, Luciana Lee.
There's your name's not on it at all.
Oops. Well.
You should fix it.
Oh, whoops. Yeah, I started that in 2010 and I called it Flippant Hiatus because I was like, well, until I get my shit together, I'll have this blog and I still post to
12 or 13 years later. Yeah. Still a stopgap.
Yeah.
But you're still putting out really fun stuff on it.
I am.
By fun, I mean, like, your stuff is, I mean, it's usually pretty dark and pretty heavy, but like, you know what I mean.
Still putting out sad stuff since 2010. But that's really when I felt close to poetry. Anything that I posted on there that was poetry felt important to me and needed to be out there. And the reason I did that was because there's no job that I could find, especially in Holland, Michigan, that would have anything to do with my creative writing major that I could stomach. It really, you know, it just...
I get that.
It had to be for me. It couldn't be for anybody else. I can't do marketing. I can't do any of that. I can only do poetry and prose, and it has to mean something to me.
Yeah.
And that's not how clients work. So... No,
It has to mean something to them and their audience.
Right.
And you can go fuck yourself.
Right. So, yeah, that's why I started that. I was like, well, I'm publishing somewhere and it's on my blog that I own and that I run and that no one reads.
So. I love that. I love that your work isn't so on the nose. You're not spoon feeding your readers.
No.
You know, it can be a bit ambiguous sometimes, which I think as a reader, it allows for us to kind of almost like interject our own experiences and to kind of make our own meaning out of it. But I want to break down one of your more recent pieces and really understand the intent.
Which one?
It's called White Noise.
Okay.
I have it here.
You want to read it?
I think it'll be better coming from you.
Oh, shit. Okay. The white noise in my head is a constant scream, a clash between the need to chase potential, immediately manifesting unachieved dreams, and the rest only craves existence and survival. What I still don't know is if the screamer is me or everything that I'm supposed to be.
So before you break it down, a couple things I want to point out. Mm-hmm. A, your voice completely changed. I don't know if you knew that. I don't know if that was conscious.
I did not know that.
But that, I think, is a really interesting insight into how you're perceiving your work. And I think that's fucking awesome.
Oh.
I mean, we're friends.
Yes.
And I've known you for...
at least a decade.
No.
2014.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Almost.
Yeah.
So I tried my best to kind of take that in and to try to see it from your perspective. Mm-hmm. And here's what I got out of it. If I'm Lucy now. Okay.
It's tough. Good luck.
So I know that you're super creative in a lot of different directions, and professionally I've watched you get overlooked and disrespected and denied deserving opportunities for some dumbass reason or another, and this felt like a boiling point to me.
I mean, thank you. For one, for, I guess, seeing me as an artist. For me, when I wrote that, everything that I write that's sort of like a creative critique is internal. So it's basically the voices in my own head competing. No one else has anything to do with that. Point of what I write is so that you can, like, it is ambiguous sometimes, and it's so that you can relate to it, so that the reader can make it their own and say, am I the screamer? Do I hear the white noise? Is it me? Or they can feel my loss as their loss. That's the point. Because who wants to read one person's story unless you're reading an autobiography? Like, if you're reading a collection of poetry, it has to resonate with you. And that's the point.
Right.
So you read what you heard in your own head. And I love that. I love that perspective because it's wildly different than what I felt when I was writing it.
So what did you feel?
Like I was failing myself internally, creatively. Does that make sense?
It makes sense and it sucks.
Yeah.
Well. But it's valid.
Yeah. That's literally everything that I write is just a battle of wits between me and like the meaner me that lives, you know, that like lives in me. It's a really mean voice in my head. And it makes for really good poetry. Yeah.
But I think we've talked about this a little bit. A common through line in your work is that shit gets pretty dark.
When it's the darkest, it's the realest. And I feel like if I can write it and live it, someone else can at least read it, you know? And I know that I'm not the only one who gets that dark. And if someone else read that and felt validated, I guess, in their own struggle, however they read it, whatever they're trying to be and however they feel like they're failing, if they feel like someone else is also feeling like they're failing too.
Right, which is probably usually the case.
Yeah. I mean, it's just to sort of say, like, this is my normal. It's okay if it's your normal too.
Do you ever struggle to get what you're trying to say out the way you want to say it?
Yes, is that obvious?
No.
Yeah, all the time. That's why it's poetry, and that's why every word counts, and it takes a long time for me to get to the point where I can say, this is done, this is what I meant to say.
How do you get through it?
Lots of edits. I mean, usually it'll come from a really strong, like I'm not the type of writer where I sit down every day and I'm like, I'm going to write for an hour and then I'm going to start my day. I can't do that. I have to wait for a really strong emotion to come along and then I try to put it into words and then it's like word vomit. Like, you know, you get it all out there and then you take what you have there and you make it smaller and you say, you know, less of like, you don't want to explain how it feels. You want to feel how it feels. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
When I'm drawing or painting or designing or whatever, it's either very isolating or I'm experiencing moments of profound connection. Do you ever experience anything like that?
Yes. Writing is only isolating, but you connect to the part of yourself that doesn't pop up that often, I guess. Like you're digging inside yourself for the best work. And it's not stuff that you can live with when it's on the surface. Like, I can't walk around every day and be like, oh my God, I was in a car accident in 2008. Like, what's that doing to me now? Like, I can't walk around like that. You have to dig deep. It's just soul searching, basically, inside yourself. So I don't feel isolated. And maybe this is bipolar. I don't know. But I feel like I connect to, like, another me in my own head when I write. And it's not lonely. It's just
for you.
Yeah. It's just, I write just for me, but then I edit so that it can be the best interpretation from the reader, I guess. I really don't know at this point how much more vulnerable I can be because you have those, like, it's in my writing. It's like, should I be here? And it's like, well, how many people ask themselves that on a daily basis? Probably not a lot.
How do you not have any guard up?
I don't know.
And what do you get out of it?
I get response from real raw people, I guess, like yourself. Or I have really uncomfortable interactions with people who can't go that deep. And like everything, like I have the kind of mind where everything that's ever happened to me that I think about constantly comes into my brain as I start my day. I'm like, okay, well, I'm still here. I didn't die. I wonder why. And I feel like that's really hard to function on. And I probably...
I'd imagine so.
Yeah, and I probably don't do the best job of it, but I would imagine that a lot of people who are in different careers and different, you know, skill sets could never function that way because you can't second guess your existence.
You're comparing yourself to a lot of other people.
Well, and I mean, that's why other people are successful.
How do you measure success?
Not struggling through every step of life to like scrape to the top and like still hang on to your creativity. I felt personally accomplished when I was like, I want to learn how publishing works. I'm going to publish Love Ya on Amazon. And I did it. And like, you know, I made like $1 or $2 here or there from like little purchases or whatever. But like I got a tax form from them that was like, hey, you have to register this as income. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm legit. My book, like awesome. I have to register this for taxes. So that was cool. That's what made me feel legitimate for the first time ever.
I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. They were like, you got to register this $15 that you earn from this book. And I'm like, I will. You can take all you want from it. Like
through Amazon, do they tell you who buys stuff or does it just tell you that it was bought?
Just that it was bought. And then people can leave reviews. Someone left a review once that was a response poem.
Can we find it right now?
Look it up.
Okay. Boris. Here it is. Boris. Lovely. 5 stars. Do you want to read it?
Just to be clear, this is a review from someone I don't know who read my book of poetry and responded with a poem. Her words are an inspired maze, like capillaries woven through a knot. Feeding the extremities. In the effacious death of blood, the victorious existence stuck in the darkening swell of a clot. Again, I don't know this person.
That's a 5-star.
Oh, yeah. He gets it.
God, what does it feel like when somebody shows up for you in that way? That you don't know, a complete stranger.
It was incredible. I read that and I was like, oh my God, this is so creepy, but in the way that I'm creepy.
In the way that you can really appreciate it.
Yes. I was like, ah, this person gets it. And I love it. And it meant the world to me because, you know, people that you know are going to pat you on the back and say, like, you did a really good job. Thanks. You know, and they're like, oh, my God, what the fuck is wrong with her?
Yeah.
Like,
whether they get it or not, they're going to show up for you and celebrate your moves and your successes and stuff.
Right. Yeah. When it's a stranger,
it's different.
It is. And it's someone that you meant to connect with in that way. I don't know. I feel like most of the steps of my life I've done alone. And it's just harder. And everyone who's like had like normal success, I guess, by American standards, like they're doing okay. You know, they rent or own a house, like they live, you know, how they want to live. And then maybe they get to do what they want to do creatively. Aaron McCall.
Shut up.
I don't know. You're not stepping on anyone's back to get to where you're at. You work really hard. You're there.
Yeah, but to be completely honest with you, there is a lot of months where I'm like, oof, these motherfuckers better pay their bills because I have a mortgage I have to pay. It's not, I think what you see on social media for myself and for a lot of other people is fucking, it's not real.
Oh, I know that.
Everybody's presenting the best version of themselves to, I mean, motives are probably all over the board, right? But
still, you work for yourself. And you're your own graphic designer. I mean, here you are with a podcast.
I don't make any money off of this. This is a really expensive endeavor. And I wish people would go buy a fucking t-shirt from Cotton Girl.
I have no money and I bought a hoodie. So everyone else needs to step up.
On that night.
On that note.
Yeah.
On that night.
God damn it. Let's take a left turn. Let's take a hard left turn. You want to go topic hopping?
Cool.
When you're gone, what do you hope people say about you?
That's the whole thing. When I wanted to be a writer before anything happened to me, I was always like, I want to leave a legacy. That's my childish voice. I want to leave a legacy. I want to be important. I don't know. I want to have at least one person read what I wrote and say, it's not just me. And then they feel better.
I love that.
Yeah, I don't really care about what a theoretical throng of people would say about me would be like, oh, she's nice. She made everybody feel welcome, blah, blah, blah.
No, the people you love, what do you want them to say about you?
That she cared until it hurt and she did her best. Because that's all I can say about myself at this point. I'm doing my best.
Finish the thought. Creativity requires
vulnerability.
What would your last meal be?
This is disgusting. It'd just be what?
I cannot wait.
It's just going to be water because I love the earth and I love Lake Michigan. I love being by the water. I love being in the water. If I was going to die, if someone was going to like put me to death or, you know, I had like an expiration date, I'd just say, just give me water so that I can feel connected one more time. That'd be it.
That sucks and you suck.
Shut up. It's honest.
What's the best advice you've ever received?
I get advice from wise people all the time. And it's always like, you know, give yourself some grace. And I can't do it. It's the hardest advice and the best advice. It's like, we're all human, and I know that. But like, all the important people in my life have told me that. Be kind to yourself, and that, you know, that's the, it's the kindest advice, and it's the hardest to take.
Are you trying?
Every day, but it's the hardest. I don't know. Are you kind to yourself?
No.
Yeah. See? Can do it. And that takes...
It's hard.
It takes something in them that I think I'm missing. So.
What's the worst advice you've ever received?
Probably be dating advice. Just give them a try.
Give them a spin around the block.
Yeah, just give them one date. No, that was stupid advice. Thank you for...
Does that happen a lot?
Yes.
Who's giving you this advice?
Yeah.
Name names.
No. It's just like, you know, the worst advice and the advice that I hate the most is like, no one's ever said this to me literally, but it's basically like, give love a chance. And I'm like, I don't fucking want to. I don't want to let anyone in. No man that I know can handle this sadness.
It started to sound really cocky.
No. It started sounding really cocky. No.
And then you took a hard left turn.
No, I don't want to impose this on anyone. That's the point. Like, I don't want to give love a chance because I don't want to hurt love.
I think this goes back to being kinder to yourself.
It does, but also there's just, I can't impose like my darkness on this poor guy who's just like, he's never going to get it and it's going to hurt him. And I don't want to do that.
What if that's the point of connection?
But you, no. I've done Tinder. I've done Bumble. I've done Hinge. I've done OkCupid. I've done Match. They can't do it.
I was going to say, to be fair, I haven't dated in a few minutes.
You got married when you were 12.
I was 27.
Okay. You met someone in the wild before... Okay, what year was that?
Before the... I mean, it was like MySpace days.
Okay, yes. Before apps were the only option, almost. Because if you walk outside and you're me and you've got like... I'll be a little bit nice to myself. If you've got like a pretty face and you look approachable and it's just this poor like sucker who's like... who doesn't expect any depth at all. he just, you know, sees what he wants to see, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why I am utterly alone with my cat and my dog. So I'm not utterly alone, but I do say to them every day, thank you for being my friend. Out loud.
Knowing what you know now. What advice would you give to yourself just starting out in poetry?
Well, I would have been life advice or poetry advice.
Your call.
I would tell myself, hey, sister, it's going to get a lot darker. So stop trying to write stories about... The only one that's popping into my head is this stupid fucking story where I wrote about like... someone coming by with a cheese cart that didn't even happen. It was fiction and it was bullshit and no one would want to read it.
I love cheese.
The story was the dumbest thing that I've ever written. The only reason I got credit for it was because it was on paper. And I'm like, all right, I would say to myself, I think, okay, at 18. Yeah. 18. I'd say, hey, just wait. You're going to need poetry because this is not poetry, what you're doing right now. This, like, these short stories, nobody gives a shit about. You're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to go through some stuff and writing is going to be the only place to go. I had a professor say to me, I know you're a good writer and this, this does not reflect that. Like the stupid thing that you wrote. They said, you need to go deeper. And at that point, I didn't. I mean, I did. We all do. We have, you know, like our childhood trauma, all that stuff. You know, things that have happened in our lives where we could go deeper, but I was like, I don't.
Are you scared?
No, I just didn't. I didn't get it. I didn't get that life was darker than that. I didn't get it. You don't get it until it happens. And there's nothing else to write about now. And that's probably a problem too, but it's whatever. There was everything that I tried to do beforehand and everything that I've done afterwards. And I'm only proud of the things that I've done after everything happened because it's real. And I'm putting myself out there, and I was not doing that before, and I didn't know how to do that until it was my only outlet almost, because there's no one you can talk to with that stuff.
What's the worst idea that you've ever followed through with?
Creatively or in life?
Whatever you want.
Well, as a resident of Chicago, probably moving to Chicago.
You would have rather stayed in Holland?
No. I don't know what I would have done differently, but it was almost like I was trying to run from myself, and you can't run far enough to get away from yourself. And Chicago is 2.5 hours away from Holland.
It's not that far.
It's not that far. No, no.
But it is a completely different world.
It is. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go to the big city for, you know, a better job opportunity. With, you know, day jobs and stuff like that. And then I get to work on my art, whatever. But no, your trauma follows you everywhere and nothing has changed.
I was going to follow that up with a more lighthearted question. So we're just going to keep on the path. And what are you watching or listening to right now?
I'm always watching Dateline in the background.
I fucking love Dateline.
Keith Morrison could just narrate my sweet dreams.
You know what? I've said this to my wife as a kind of a joke, but when I get murdered,
oh,
just make sure make sure Keith Morrison is my guy.
Yes, I think about that all the time. I'm like, if it's gonna happen, I want Keith to tell the story.
I gotta say, that is one fucked up commonality.
Whatever. If he tells his audience that I lit up a room, I will have had a purpose.
If he can make some dumbass puns about my life.
If he says to my friends and family, what was that like? was that rough?
Keith Morrison's better than that, and you know that.
I know. He always says, what was that like? And he leaves it open-ended, and that's...
Lucy, what's your favorite thing?
Ever?
Yeah.
My pets. Like, the love that you feel for your pets.
It's fine. Just drop your drink on my... I mean, it's not my couch, but... Do you have any regrets?
I regret not exploring traumatic brain injury when I had one. It wasn't as much of a big deal then as it was now. Like in 2008, there weren't as many resources as there are now, where they say, like, if you've had a concussion, you need to, like, you're going to have repercussions. Your life is going to be a little different, like, 10 years down the road. And I'm noticing things that are strange.
Do you care to expand?
I guess, yeah, but it's hard to, because I'm just starting to notice them. So it's like memory lapses and, you know, how you view the world. You can be defensive and also... I've read studies where they've shown that people who have had like a traumatic brain injury tend to seclude themselves from everyone that they know. Huh. And yeah, I know. I read that and I was like, oh shit. Well, I am entirely alone. I wonder if that's why. So, because it skews how you view people and how they respond to you. And you think that they're thinking one thing and they're thinking another. it's just weird. I don't know. So I've ended up essentially entirely alone, and I wish that I could have had the resources back then that I had now. But that's not entirely my fault. I wish I just could have warned myself, like, hey, this does matter. And it's not just that you survived. You survived a big, your head was smashed. My head was smashed against the roof of my own car. And I hung, is this too dark?
Go.
Okay. I was crossing the road. 2008, I was just going to work. I was crossing the road, just going to my landscaping job that I loved at Hope College. And I looked up one way, I looked down the other, I looked again, and I went, and I pulled out in front of someone who's going 60 plus miles an hour, and I'm just in this like little Toyota Corolla. So I've got my seatbelt on. I'm also like up the road from my home that I just left, where I live with my parents during the summer because it's sophomore year of college. The guy who hits me, bends my car into a V, and I flip over onto the top of the car. And the only way that I remember it is in a dream that I had, like 2 weeks after. It's just me in slow motion trying to get away from this person who I can't get away from because it's too late. Just too late. Is that thunder?
No, I think that's, I mean, we're in Chicago, so I think that's maybe a trash chute? I don't know.
Just the garbage from the day. I hung up. I had my seatbelt on. I don't have any memory of getting knocked out, but I believe that when my car flipped over, I bashed my head on the roof of it, and that's what split it open. And so I'm just hanging upside down in this upside down car, bleeding out. I woke up once, and there were people standing around me, but they were upside down, and I didn't understand it, and it just became so overwhelming to process that I passed back out. That plus the pain of my head. I mean, it felt like a hot knife was just in my head. And I passed back out. And the next thing I remember is being in Zeeland Hospital, which is a miracle in itself. I mean, the amount of blood that I lost, I easily could have died that day, but I didn't. What was the question again?
Regrets.
Regrets. I couldn't have stopped that. It was an accident completely. And you are changed from that moment on. So if I could go back, I go back to after that in 2008 and say, you're not okay. It's okay that it's just you. You don't have to wrap this up. Like, my brain, I guess, made a path to what happened to me and happened to my friend. And all that I could feel was grateful that I was still here. But I never addressed the ramifications of what had actually happened to me in a separate way.
I end every episode with the same question.
Okay.
Are you okay?
No, I have a lot of work to do, and it's hypocritical to say that my writing is the deepest thing I do because I can't even confront what's wrong with me now. I can do death, I can do injury, I can do loss, which is wild. I can put loss into words, but I can't even put, you know, existence. Just like kind of failing at existence. I can't put that into words because it's hard to admit that you're not okay. So no.
I really do appreciate your vulnerability and your honesty and your willingness to just put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
Both in this conversation and in your work.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other aspects of your life that you can put onto paper or that you'd like to put onto paper? Do you ever explore the light?
No. I like to live in the light, but it's really boring to write about. I don't want to write a story about how, like, I'm okay and, like, this beautiful thing happened. Like, nobody gives a shit. Like,
it doesn't scratch the itch.
No. And no one wants to, like, I don't want to read that. I don't want to read about someone else feeling great about their stupid life. Like, no. I want to live that, and I want to keep it to myself.
Yeah.
It's mine.
It's pure.
Yeah. I earned it. I don't want to try to put it into words. No. I don't write about the light. I write about the dark.
I hate the face you just made.
The darkness.
Okay, let's get out of here. Okay, shake it off. I'm gonna bring some levity to this for a moment, and I want to share. I wanted to give a little bit of background as to my relationship with Lucy.
Yeah.
We started working together like 10 years ago for, I don't know, just a couple years, but then stayed in touch before I ever actually knew her. So, okay. I'm trying to think of like the best way to set up the story. So she would be at the reception desk, and where the bathrooms were in this agency that we both worked at, you had to make eye contact. Well, you didn't have to.
Aaron McCullough had to.
You didn't have to, but I chose to. As I'm walking to the bathroom, I lock in eye contact and hold it the entire time as I'm going into the bathroom. And I did this for probably a year straight. And then ideally, she's still at the desk when I get out there, so try to lock it in as soon as I open the door, too. And it's like, I would be gone for like 10 or 15 minutes, knows.
Yeah, she knows what's going on.
She knows that I'm closing big deals.
Awesome.
Okay.
Here, let me turn the lights down again. I'm gonna take you somewhere if I could.
Please.
Okay. This was a really, really important conversation for me to hear, and I have a couple things to share. First and foremost, I wanted to talk about the fact that one of the first things she said right off the jump was something that resonated with me really deeply. And what she said was, she has no evidence that she's working. Because I think at the end of the day, you have to feel it first. You got to believe in it first. Doesn't matter what everyone else says. If you don't believe it, then it's never, ever going to feel right, you know? So even from the beginning of the episode, I knew it was going to be really important to me. I could already see myself and hear myself in the words Lucy was saying. So on that note, the second thing I wanted to talk about was the last line of her poem that she read. Yeah, and the line is, what I still don't know is if the screamer is me or everything that I'm supposed to be. Instant goosebumps.
Yeah.
Just amazing. And it's amazing that I've never met Lucy, but like, you know, through her experiences and the way she's developed this skill of writing, she can write words that apply to so many different people, but it all roots itself in like her trauma.
And I think that's a really great skill, that you can kind of express what you mean, but then also leave room for interpretation.
Yeah. And lastly, if it's okay, I wanted to share a quick story, if I may. It's nothing related to creativity, but there's a moment I had listening to this episode. It's a realization about myself that I had, and it's one of the reasons I'm so grateful that you all had the conversation you did. Long story short, senior year of high school, I went on a spring break trip to New Orleans with a bunch of friends, three friends, two friends and my girlfriend at the time. Just days before the trip, I had an intense stomach ache, probably the worst pain I had felt in my entire life. I was so stubborn, though, to go on this trip that I refused to go in and see the doctor, and I refused to hear anything that it was just a stomach flu or something like that, you know? So I went in and I was insistent. I was like, it's stomach flu. It's just, it came on fast. It's whatever. I'm sure it'll be gone soon, whatever. So what happened was the doctor, you know, kind of went with it and was like, all right, we'll prescribe you some pain medication and send you on your way. So I'm taking my pain medication, which is taking, you know, the edge off of it. We take a Greyhound bus down to New Orleans. It is a nightmare to revisit those memories because I was drenched in sweat from a fever. I couldn't get my head close enough to the window to stay cool. Once we get to New Orleans, I laid in the hotel room for like three additional days. I just a stubborn, stupid kid. Eventually, my friends took me into the hospital. We all went together. I get checked in, and it turns out my appendix had burst even before I left. So I was just full of infection, and I was dying. And I ended up being in the hospital for 2 weeks solid. What I've come to realize through listening to your conversation with Lucy is I have a lot of things that have now turned into long-term complications that resulted from that experience. Things like memory loss and, you know, some of the things I struggle with now, lack of confidence, things like that. These are all things that evolved from that experience.
Do you see a scenario where you, like Lucy, take that kind of experience and channel it into creativity for the sake of healing or therapy or anything like that?
I am empowered to dive deeper now that the root of the issue has been shown to me. I'm empowered to dig deeper into it.
It's really interesting because I think how you channel adversity and tragedy for better or worse, like it contributes greatly to who we are as people and as creatives.
Yeah.
And there is so much in life that is completely out of our control, but something that this conversation reminded me of was that my creativity and the things that I make, that's entirely up to me, and it can be whatever I want it to be. It can be fun. It can be therapy. It can be healing, or it can be shallow. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. All right. Tell me who we're talking to next.
The next one is with brand designer and a former colleague of mine, Susan Thompson. She's fucking smart and strategic in her moves. And that one hits next week, and we'll see you then, babies. Sick and tired.